Welcome back to another deep dive. We've got a fascinating stack of sources today.
Oh, absolutely. This one is really exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Because, if I asked you right now to picture the most advanced AI interface on the planet, you're probably imagining, I don't know, a massive, glowing million-dollar dashboard.
Right. Or like a sleek smartphone app generating high-definition video in real time.
Exactly. Or some sort of crazy augmented reality headset. We have been totally conditioned to believe that a massive leap in technology requires this equally massive, highly visual interface.
We really have.
But today, our mission for this deep dive is to explore a shift in tech that completely shatters that assumption. We are looking at a massive change in how AI is deployed. And the wildest part about it is the hardware.
Yeah, that's the real kicker here.
It's not happening on the latest $1,000 smartphone. It's actually happening over plain, old school, 1980s style telephone lines. Okay, let's unpack this.
So we are looking at a fundamental reversal of how humans and computers interact. I mean, for the last 20 plus years, we've essentially forced humans to adapt to machines.
Right, like learning the specific way a machine wants us to talk to it.
Exactly. We had to learn how to, pinch, swipe, double tap, and navigate all these complex drop-down menus just to get our devices to do what we wanted.
Which isn't always intuitive.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But the technology we're exploring today flips that burden entirely. It moves us away from complex GUIs, graphical user interfaces, and relies entirely on voice user interfaces over standard telecom networks.
So turning AI from a luxury app into like a utility for everyone, even if all they have is a dusty old landline.
Precisely. It's democratizing the intelligence.
Okay, but let's be real for a second because automated phone systems are not new, and frankly, they have historically been absolutely terrible.
Oh, the worst.
Right. I mean, you and I have both been trapped in that nightmare loop of, press one for billing, press two to pull your hair out.
Yeah, the classic interactive voice response hell.
Exactly. So what is the actual technological breakthrough here? Why does talking to a cutting-edge AI over a basic phone line suddenly feel like a real conversation rather than a frustrating walkie-talkie
Well,
exercise?
the barrier was always latency. Human conversation requires a very specific rhythm to feel natural.
Right, the back and forth.
Yeah. If you ask a question and the AI takes like 3 or 4 seconds to process your speech, send it to a server, formulate an answer, synthesize the audio, and then send it back.
The illusion of a conversation just shatters instantly. It's
It
awkward.
shatters entirely. But recently, two pieces of technology converged to solve this. First is streaming automatic speech recognition, or ASR.
Okay.
Instead of waiting for you to finish your entire sentence before it starts translating your audio, it processes your speech in overlapping tiny slices.
How tiny are we talking here?
Sometimes just 50 milliseconds long. It's guessing the context on the fly. And when you combine that with ultra-low latency text-to-speech models, the total round-trip response time has plummeted to under 500 milliseconds.
Wow. Half a second.
Yeah, half a second.
That is the magic threshold, right? Where it stops feeling like you're operating a machine and starts feeling like you're just talking to a person.
Exactly.
And there was this detail in the research that fascinated me regarding the server power required to actually do this, because regular phone audio is heavily compressed.
Right, it uses a very specific old standard.
Yeah, the Mu-Law compression from the 70s, it squashes the sound waves into this incredibly narrow 8 kilohertz band, which sounds like a limitation, but it's actually a superpower here, isn't it?
Oh, it's the secret to the entire architecture's scalability.
Yeah.
Processing an 8 kilohertz audio stream is essentially microscopic compared to the compute power required to render graphics on a screen.
Or process high-def video. It's like the AI is going on this massive digital diet.
That's a great way to put it.
By stripping away all the heavy, visually expensive stuff,
Yeah.
the pulsing, glowing orbs, the sliding text boxes, the pixel rendering, the intelligence just becomes lightning fast and unbelievably cheap to run.
Because it just needs to push simple sound waves.
Right.
And taking the screen away makes the tech incredibly lightweight. But the cascading effect of that is far more important. A lightweight system doesn't require a massive broadband internet connection or a premium device.
Which completely changes who gets to use it.
Exactly. This fundamentally alters the demographic landscape of who actually gets to participate in the AI revolution.
Yeah, this is where it stops being just a clever engineering trick and turns into a massive societal shift. If you eliminate the need for a screen, you open the door to millions of people who have been, frankly, locked out of advanced tech.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sources specifically highlight the over 60s demographic. A lot of elderly users find touchscreens deeply frustrating. Dry fingertips don't register well on glass. The icons are tiny. The keyboards are impossible to use accurately.
And the operating systems are constantly changing their layouts. It's exhausting.
Right. But a regular phone call, that is an interface they have mastered for over half a century.
It's second nature.
So an elderly user without a smartphone, or maybe they don't even have internet access at their house, can now dial a standard phone number and interact with the most sophisticated intelligence on the planet just by talking to it like a neighbor.
What's fascinating here is that the physical constraints of the user's hardware simply vanish.
Mm.
And that principle extends far beyond just elderly users.
Oh, yeah. The tradespeople examples in the sources were amazing.
Right. Think about the massive workforce engaged in manual labor. Construction workers, farmers, long-haul truck drivers. For these professions, their hands and eyes are completely occupied by the physical demands of the job.
But their ears are free.
Precisely. Their ears are free.
Picture this, right? You're a construction worker standing on a piece of scaffolding 30 feet up in the air. You're wearing thick protective work gloves, holding a heavy power tool in one hand, and just trying to maintain your balance.
That's incredibly stressful.
Right. And if they need to calculate a complex load-bearing weight limit or look up a highly specific material spec for the steel they're installing, they cannot safely pull a glass rectangle out of their pocket.
They can't bite off their glove and try to unlock a screen.
Exactly. You can't type out a massive prompt 30 feet in the air.
Operating a visual interface in that environment is not just inefficient, it's physically dangerous.
Yeah, but with this system, that same worker wearing a simple Bluetooth earpiece can just open a voice channel and ask the AI the complex calculation out loud.
Without breaking their physical flow.
They don't take their eyes off the steel beam. The intelligence just operates alongside them in the physical world. It's totally hands-free.
It's the same for a farmer driving a tractor.
Yeah.
If they're pulling complex machinery, they don't need to look down at a tablet to query optimal fertilizer mixtures for changing weather.
Right. They just ask the air.
Exactly.
Huh.
It provides all the benefits of an expert consultant without requiring the user to actually stop working to consult them.
Okay, so the ambient nature of the voice channel solves the problem of occupied hands. But let's add a layer of complexity here. What happens when the work environment isn't just physically demanding, but highly stressful and incredibly fast-paced?
The triage clinic scenario in our sources provides a perfect stress test for this.
Yeah, that was a wild example.
Imagine a nurse working in an underfunded, low-bandwidth medical clinic dealing with a sudden influx of patients. Speed and hygiene are the two most critical factors.
Right. They can't be fiddling with devices.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The nurse is currently at the sink, aggressively scrubbing and washing their hands. They obviously can't touch a keyboard, and they definitely do not have the luxury of waiting for a slow rural internet connection to load some heavy web-based medical dashboard.
So they use the open voice channel. They dictate the new patient's complex symptoms out loud to the AI diagnostic agent while they are still washing their hands.
Yes. Because voice is undeniably the most phenomenal tool we have for narrative. It is the fastest, most organic way for a human to explain a complex, dynamic scenario.
Or describe a nuanced problem, like a patient's shifting condition.
Right. However, voice is absolutely terrible for communicating dense data.
Okay, I am so glad you brought this up, because reading through the sources, I found myself getting genuinely skeptical about this exact application.
It's a very valid concern.
Right, because if I am that stressed out nurse or that busy construction worker, and I ask the AI a highly complex question, the absolute last thing I want is for a robotic voice to start reading me a Wikipedia article over the phone.
Oh, nobody wants that.
If the AI starts verbally dictating a 7-column spreadsheet of material stresses or a list of 10 different differential diagnoses with exact dosages, my short-term memory is going to fail instantly. It just sounds like an incredibly frustrating way to receive complex information.
And you'd be entirely correct if the system were just a basic text-to-speech engine reading the screen out loud. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't do that.
Okay.
The architecture uses a mechanism called an asynchronous multimodal handoff.
Multimodal hand?
Right. The AI fundamentally understands that human auditory memory cannot hold a spreadsheet. So it splits the response. It acts as a frictionless switch between the spoken word and the written word.
Narrative in your brain, data in your pocket. I love how the sources phrase that. So how does that handoff actually play out in the clinic?
Well, as the nurse finishes washing their hands, The AI comes back over the speaker with a highly synthesized brief verbal summary.
Okay.
It might say, I've noted the symptoms. The most likely immediate concern based on the vitals is an acute respiratory infection. That gives the nurse the immediate narrative context.
They get the gist of it instantly.
Exactly. But simultaneously, the server triggers an SMS text message to the nurse's phone containing the heavy data.
Oh, wow.
The full list of differential diagnoses, specific medication dosages, hyperlinks to standard treatment protocols, all of it goes right to the phone.
So you get the empathy and the immediate situational awareness through the audio, but the hard, dense data is preserved in text for the exact moment you have a free hand to actually look at it.
You've got it.
That makes so much sense. Like a financial query, as another example. If I ask for my portfolio update, the AI just tells me the narrative out loud, who is up, who is down, but pings my phone with the actual dynamic charts.
It separates the meaning of the data from the display of the data and routes each to the human sense best equipped to handle it.
That is just elegant. But wait, I'm thinking of another issue here. There is still a massive flaw with talking under pressure. When we are stressed, we make mistakes.
We do. We stutter. We stumble.
Right. If I am typing a complex legal prompt on my laptop, I use the backspace key constantly. I edit my thoughts. I delete sentences. I reorganize. On a live phone call, there is no backspace key.
No, there isn't.
So if the nurse is dictating symptoms and stutters or realizes they gave the wrong temperature, do they have to hang up and start the whole dictation over?
The technology has actually evolved past that limitation through something called advanced interruption handling.
Interruption handling.
Yeah. The system utilizes underlying technologies like custom voice activity detection models, often referred to as Solero VAD, or OpenAI's real-time API. Basically, the AI maintains a sliding context window.
Okay, what does that do?
It's constantly evaluating your speech before it finalizes anything. So it's listening to the whole phrase in context.
So if I'm talking and I say, the patient has a fever of 101, no, wait, scratch that, it's 102 degrees. How does the server process that without getting confused?
That sliding context window dynamically rewrites your prompt in real time behind the scenes. It recognizes the phrase, no, wait, scratch that, not as data to be analyzed, but as a command.
Like a verbal backspace key.
Yeah, exactly. It's a command to delete the previous data point. It silently edits the prompt to say fever of 102 before it ever sends the query to the language model to generate a medical response.
Wow. So it untangles our human messiness completely seamlessly. We can just speak naturally, flaws, stutters and all, and the machine cleans it up.
It does. But ironically, that seamless silent editing creates an entirely new problem.
What's that?
And it's not a technological problem at all. It's purely psychological. Perfect silence on a telephone line is terrifying to the human brain.
Oh, that's so true.
Think about it. When you interact with a glowing screen, you're constantly receiving visual reassurance that the machine is working. You see a loading bar or a spinning wheel or little pulsing dots.
Even when you talk to a human on the phone, you get audio cues. If I ask you a hard question right now and you need a few seconds to think, I will hear you take a breath. Or shift in your chair, or, you know, mumble to yourself.
Right. There is ambient feedback proving I haven't vanished.
Yeah.
But a digital AI server processing a complex prompt generates zero acoustic feedback. It is absolute dead silence. And the sources highlight this as the voice fatigue problem.
Voice fatigue?
Yeah. If an AI pauses for merely 2 seconds of dead air to process a complicated query, the user instantly assumes the call has dropped.
We have all had that moment of panic on a regular phone call. Hello, are you still there? Did I lose you? Imagine feeling that anxiety every single time you ask a supercomputer a question. That sounds miserable.
It completely destroys the user's trust in the system. So, to prevent this, developers have to artificially inject human-like imperfections back into the AI.
Oh, that is so clever.
Yeah, they utilize natural conversational fillers. If the server calculates that a response will take an extra 1.5 seconds to generate, it instantly triggers a pre-recorded, natural-sounding audio file.
So the system literally plays a sound of itself saying like, let me check that for you, or that's an interesting question.
Or even just plays the ambient sound of typing on a keyboard.
It is faking its own cognitive struggle just to keep us psychologically anchored to the call. We have to make the world's most advanced intelligence pretend to be a slow human so we don't hang up on it.
This raises an important question, though, because that illusion of humanity is critical for trust, but it raises an obvious threshold issue.
Meaning what?
No matter how advanced the AI is, or how well it fates a human response time, There are situations where a machine is simply out of its depth and a real human is required.
Right. And the sources refer to this as the 3% human fallback, right?
Yes. The architecture contains a strict escalation protocol. The AI is constantly monitoring for specific triggers.
Like what kind of triggers?
Well, if it detects deep emotional distress or panic in the user's vocal tone, or if the user's query crosses into high-stakes legal ambiguity or extreme medical complexity.
It knows it's out of its league.
Exactly. It immediately stops trying to be the expert. It gracefully transforms its role into a receptionist.
And it does so without making the user feel like they hit a brick wall. Like, it doesn't just play an error tone and say, I cannot help you, goodbye.
No, that would be terrible design.
Right. It actively orchestrates a handoff. It triggers a live human callback scheduler in the background. It will literally tell the user over the phone, I've securely set your case details to your phone. A human specialist is reviewing them and will call you back in exactly 7 minutes.
And then it adds, until then, I am still here to keep you company.
I am still here. That is powerful.
The phrase, I am still here, is the anchor. The user feels guided, not abandoned. The AI is acting as a receptionist, holding the door open for them to get the right human help.
Okay, so if we are designing an AI that acts like a highly competent receptionist, it also needs to be able to take messages and handle complex, ongoing tasks for busy professionals.
Right, the administrative side.
Yeah, which brings us to the final segment of our deep dive. How the system functions as the ultimate answering machine. Up until now, we've really focused on real-time voice interaction.
But the true power of this architecture is that it is fully asynchronous. It uses a store and forward method that completely decouples your input from the AI's output.
Which solves a huge problem.
Oh, massive. It solves the massive cognitive load of trying to verbally speak a perfectly structured 5-minute-long prompt and the annoyance of waiting on the line for a massive answer to compute.
Let's look at what the sources call the silent mode superpower, because this is so cool. Let's say you are a hyper-busy project manager. You're sitting in the back row of a crowded courtroom or a silent library or, you know, riding a packed subway train.
Somewhere you definitely cannot start dictating a complex prompt out loud to an AI.
Exactly. But you can text quietly. The barrier here is that standard SMS text messages have a strict 160-character limit. So how do you send a massive multi-paragraph prompt through basic text messages?
The server employs a temporal buffer. When you send that first text message, the server doesn't just read it and immediately fire back a confused partial reply.
Right.
It opens a temporary window and waits. It relies on something called a user data header, or a UDH.
Okay, what does that actually look like in practice? What is a UDH?
The UDH is basically a hidden serial number attached to the data packet of your text message. It tells the server this is part 1 of 5.
Ah, okay.
So the server reads that header and simply holds your texts in a holding pen, stitching the fragments back together in the correct order as they arrive.
The multi-SMS assembly line. So I can sit in that silent library and discreetly type out a massive prompt over the course of 10 or 15 minutes.
Yep, take your time.
I could be copying over clauses from a dense legal document across 6 different text messages or outlining a massive travel itinerary. The server just sits there quietly, catching each text, holding them together as one continuous job ticket.
How does it know when I am actually done typing?
It requires a threading rule. You simply end your final text message with a predefined keyword, like done or call.
Oh, that's easy.
And the exact millisecond the server detects that keyword, it collapses the buffer, finalizes the massive prompt you just built, sends it to the language model for processing, and shoots you back a tiny confirmation text.
Saying something like, prompt received in processing. Call in any time to hear your response.
Exactly.
Call in any time. So I finish my meeting. I step out of the library 2 hours later, and I dial the AI's phone number. Now, here's where the security aspect fascinated me.
The authentication is great. It is. Because I am calling from a phone, not logging into a web portal with a username and password. How does the server instantly know it's me?
Your voice and your device act as a dual-factor authentication system. When the AI answers, you state your name. The system captures your spoken name and uses it for phonetic and biometric authentication.
So it knows my voice?
Yes. And simultaneously, it cross-references that voice print with the caller ID specifically, the automatic number identification, or ANI, of your phone. If the voice biometric matches the registered phone number, the server unlocks your personal profile instantly.
It is essentially making you the CEO of your own private AI answering machine.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Throughout the day, you might have texted it four different massive prompts, one asking for a summary of a legal brief, one asking for dinner recipes based on dietary restrictions, and one debugging a piece of code.
And when you call in, it doesn't just read them chronologically.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The AI greets you and says, "Welcome back. I have three pending responses. Would you like to hear them in order of priority or jump to the most recent?"
The priority queue. It is vital because it respects the user's time and cognitive bandwidth. And remember our earlier point, listening to a 500-word essay over a phone line is an awful experience.
Yeah, we don't want the robot reading Wikipedia to us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to solve this, the AI orchestrates the audio delivery using a technique called chunking.
It doesn't just dump a wall of text into your ear. It generates a 10-second executive summary first. Like, it'll say, "Your legal brief summary is ready. The primary risk identified is in clause 4. Would you like a detailed breakdown?"
And if you say yes, the chunking begins. The AI will read exactly three sentences of complex information, and then it deliberately inserts 2 full seconds of absolute silence.
Wow.
It is engineering the pacing of the conversation to match human cognitive limits. Your brain needs those 2 seconds of silence to actually digest the concept of the first three sentences before the machine moves on.
And perhaps the most brilliant engineering trick in this entire asynchronous loop is what the sources call the write once, read many advantage. Because the AI is ultimately generating a synthesized audio file of its response, that MP3 file is persistent.
Yes, it is permanently linked to your phone number's profile.
It functions exactly like a restaurant kitchen prep station. Instead of the AI chef cooking the whole meal from scratch every single time you call, the language model did the heavy computational lifting yesterday when you texted the prompt.
Right. It cooked the answer, turned it into an audio file, and left the finished plate under a heat lamp for you to grab whenever you want.
So if I am listening to that complex legal breakdown while walking down the street and a loud ambulance drives by and I miss the crucial part.
You don't have to panic.
Right. I don't have to ask the AI to completely reevaluate the prompt. I can literally hang up, call back 2 days later, authenticate my voice and simply say, "Repeat my last response."
The server just hits play on the existing MP3 file. It bypasses the large language model entirely.
Which is huge.
It is. It doesn't spend a single expensive compute token regenerating the answer. You get instant gratification, and the system saves a massive amount of money in computing power. It turns the standard telephone into a highly efficient batch processing terminal.
So the smartphone is reduced to a silent keyboard, just an SMS input device for when we need to be quiet. While the old school voice channel becomes this high fidelity speaker for delivering intelligence, we are witnessing a fundamental shift in the burden of communication here.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's pretty staggering.
Yeah. We are no longer forcing humans to learn how to type perfectly, navigate confusing drop-down menus, and scroll through endless visual dashboards. We are forcing the intelligence to learn how to listen, how to parse our messy human stutters, and how to speak back to us at a pace our brains can actually understand.
This is exactly why analysts are calling this a trillion-dollar use case. Mm. This technology isn't just a clever accessibility hack to help the elderly.
Right.
Or a niche tool designed solely for manual laborers and stressed nurses, even though it serves those demographics beautifully.
It's absolutely beautifully.
It is a massive leap toward true ambient computing. The AI stops being a destination you have to visit on a screen and becomes a true utility, as invisible, reliable, and accessible as electricity or running water. You don't need a specialized $1,000 device to access the sum of human knowledge. You just need to be able to make a sound.
Which leaves us with a pretty wild thought to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive. We started out talking about that digital diet, the idea of stripping away all the heavy graphics and glowing animations that we have been conditioned to associate with advanced tech.
Right.
If the ultimate, most frictionless digital interface is just our natural voice and our complex data can live quietly in simple text messages waiting for us, well, what does that actually mean for the future of screens?
That's a great question.
Will we eventually look back at our glowing, highly addictive smartphones, not as the absolute peak of human technology, but merely as a clunky intermediate stepping stone?
Just a phase.
Yeah. A heavy, distracting piece of glass we had to carry around and endure right up until the exact moment technology finally learned how to just, you know, talk to us. Something to think about the next time you find yourself staring down at a screen. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, and we'll catch you next time.